Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, good evening, good evening. This is the International Black Summit Talk Show Network coming to you live and in color. Hope all is well. Hope that you're having a wonderful week. I hope that this week starts out to take you to the stars. So on that note, let's begin by stating the Declaration of the International Black Summit. We declare ourselves, our community, and all communities whole and complete. There is nothing to do except be. We assert that we are responsible for generating community as possibility and distinction. We listen for and grant being to the possibility and creation of unpredictable results. Our conversation of, about, and for those of African descent is one of power, self-generation, abundance, unity, and integrity with the possibility of being. We stand for the expression of our spirituality, ending the murders of our men, women, and children, building economies responsible for funding our community, maintaining wellness of being in our bodies, providing human services, establishing nurturing relationships, altering the conversation of who we are in the media, empowering our youth. We declare that our community manifests itself in the world as a contribution in the transformation of the universe. Atlanta, Georgia, October 7th, 1991, March 30th, 2014. Boy, these decades go fast. Anyway, so I just wanted to read that to you and to allow you to find yourself. We didn't moment silence. North, south, east, west, above, below, and within. Moment of silence as we acknowledge ourselves and the ancestors who have gone before us. Thank you. Just really getting present to how fast time is flying by. Almost missed the moment of silence there, huh? So one of the things that I see about tonight's show is just really one of love, one of, as we close out March being Women's Month. What else I need to say about that? My daughter's birthday month. A lot of great people that I know that are born in March, the month of March. Some of my folks, Willie Mae, up in Rochester, Ryan Chester, who's writing a book. So congratulations on writing your book, and hope that is speedy and makes you lots and lots of money. A friend from school, from high school, they Riddick. She had her birthday. I think it was the. I think it might have been yesterday, the 29th. No, it was one of them. So it's just been a wonderful acknowledgement. I have to acknowledge the passing of one of my neighbors, Sue Kimbrough, who has been in the family for years. She's not a blood relative, but she is family. And so I just want to acknowledge her and really to, you know, would be remiss if I didn't mention my mother and my sister and Maria Vargas, mother of my daughter. There's a ton of other women to acknowledge as well, but those are the ones that come to mind that as we close out March, I just want to bring to light that they have heavily contributed to me. My grandmother, both my grandmothers, I had the opportunity to know both of them. Emily Hart especially near and dear to me because I spent the first 4 years in Guyana with her and my Aunt Joyce taking care of me before I came back to this country. Came back to Brooklyn, New York. So, you know, there's been quite a few significant, and you know, my other grandmother was Violet Winters. That was my mother's mother's mother, and Emily Hart was my father's mother, and she was a midwife back in Guyana, and so she was very proud because I was her oldest grandchild, and so she would take me on her journeys through the backwoods to deliver babies. So everybody called her Nurse Hart. To this day, people are, oh, yes, I remember your grandmother bringing you around. Of course, I don't remember. But anyway. And Henrietta, how are you tonight? How are you doing?
I am great.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, just listening and reflecting on what, like what you were saying, I didn't know either grandmother. I was very, very young when both of my grandparents passed away. But I just know, you know, I just know them through my sisters, what my sister says, my sisters tell me. And I know them through my parents, like looking at who my parents, you know, who my parents are. So, you know, and so that being, knowing them through that, you know, I can wonder because my paternal grandmother, my father's an only child. And so I can imagine for her to have raised a Henry, what she must have been like, okay, you know. my father, I heard my father did not believe in whooping children because he got so many when he was growing up. And my mother, I think I was a teenager before I really had what people call soul food because my mother had so much of it when she was growing up, you know. And so, you know, just in those two statements alone, I can, you know, how I can kind of see what life was like for them in a particular way. Education was the thing in my family.
Yeah, mine too. Yeah. My parents actually both had associate degrees.
Okay.
Back in the 50s, early 50s, when you know, when black people didn't even go to college, much less as a rule. I mean, you know, there were people that went to college, but you know, that was not common. And, that was a real challenge. But that was also part of the whole West Indian thing for them. You know, education in the West Indies has always been number one, you know, and still to this day is superior to our education system because they're still bringing a lot of teachers from the West Indies to teach. I know they're definitely doing that in New York, and I would imagine there are other cities around the country that are doing that as well. So, yeah, so I understand that whole thing. Because, I mean, when you think about it, the whole civil rights movement was about education. When you think about it, you know, it was about the opportunity to get educated. Now that we have all these rights, people aren't necessarily utilizing them, but they're also not getting the resources that they need to utilize them. So it's been an interesting trend when you look at how we interact with education and how the education has shifted from, maybe it hasn't shifted. One of the things that I can go back and say about the West Indies is that they've always been very clear that not everybody is to go to college. So they were very clear with the trade schools. And if you look at the, especially, I'll point out Jamaican men. They do a little carpentry. They do a little electrical work. They do a little, you know, they can do just about any kind of maintenance as part of what they've been brought up to do, in addition to whatever they've chosen as their vocation. And that's because trades and trade skills are very, very important. Now, when I went to school in high school, you had shop classes, and you had metal shop, and you had wood shop. Actually, in junior high school, we had them. but, of course, those are the things that have gotten cut out. And so if you have a love for it or you have a knack for it, it's never really cultivated in the normal school system. You then have to now go to a trade school afterwards, after high school, unless you're lucky to go to a vocational high school. You know, when you look at who and what we're setting people up for, you know, we've been setting people up for college and we've kind of forgotten all of those skills, and people from other countries have come in and done that. You know, I mean, that's, don't want to be racist about it, but I want to be, you know, tell the truth about it. That's, you know, you look at every Home Depot around 9 o'clock in the morning, there's a bunch of Mexican guys that are day workers that are ready to do whatever work is there. And part of it is some skilled work, but a lot of it is unskilled work. And they're willing to, you know, get paid $40 for that day's work. And people, you know, say, okay, you, get in the truck, kind of a thing. And so they've been able to come in and provide an economy, again, which we are not utilizing because they're getting paid cash. And then they're taking that cash and sending it out of the country. And, of course, there's no tax benefit for the folks who are here, especially when they use services. So that's that's a long way from education being important in your family. So get back to your family. So the women in your family, what else do you want to say about that?
That it's real, real interesting. My grandmother's paternal grandmother, A.M.E. Zion, that was her a denominational Christianity. And, you know, the A.M.E. Zion denomination is very, very strong on education and history and how they worship God and what should be done in the church. They're very, very, have been very consistent throughout the years. And it's also a very wealthy denomination, from my view.
AME is actually African Methodist Episcopal or African Methodist something else?
Yes, African Methodist Episcopal Zion. And Zion was, you know how there are groups that split off? So these two groups, they were AME, and, you know, they have disagreements, and they split, and they start two different sectors.
Right, different sections.
That's my understanding of how one Zion and one is just AME, you know. And so,
Okay.
Then there's CME, which is Christian Methodist Episcopal, which is another, like, kind of a split, but someone once told me, and I don't know, I haven't checked this out, but someone once told me that one was white and one was black. you know, one was African American, African Methodist, one was Christian Methodist. Like,
oh, gotcha.
Even now,
gotcha.
Gospel music is the genres are defined as there's gospel music and then there's Christian music. And Christian music is gospel music, but it's sung by white people or, you know, or everyone. It's like a general audience because they wouldn't say it was. It's not just white people, so I shouldn't even say that. But it is. It is like what is it? It's like crossover music. You'll find it in all churches. Where gospel music, you find it more so in the African American churches. But there's this new music now, and it's called Christian music. But it's really like praise. They call it praise and worship, or contemporary Christian music. But anyway, what I was saying, so I don't go too far to the left. What I was saying is, I came from that background where education was just essential. You know, like you did whatever you had to do so your children could go to school. You know,
mm-hmm.
My sister and I were having a conversation about it a couple of weeks ago about how people were committed to their families when we were growing up. People were committed to their families, and being committed to your family meant you did whatever you had to do to take care of your family.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't matter if you were the husband or the wife. You did whatever you had to do. If that meant working 3 jobs, if it meant doing laundry for somebody, if it meant whatever, you know, whatever it meant, you did whatever it took. There was nothing that was too big for you to do, and there was nothing that was too small for you to do. You did whatever it took, and you worked as a community. You know, my mother, on our block, my mother had a friend who had 5 children, and her husband was a fireman, which is a very good job. But, you know, there's no such thing as a real good paying job, and you have 5 children.
Okay. Yeah, right.
You still need more money than you're making, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know my mother used to help her friend do her laundry so that she could do hair. And so she could make money doing hair, and then she would pay my mother for helping her do her laundry, and my mother worked, but my mother would come home and help her
mm-hmm.
with her laundry. So that was like her side job. And so the money just stayed in the community. Actually, it stayed on the block. This
mm-hmm.
allowed the men to go to work, come home, and go to sleep.
Yep.
And
yep.
And everything was taken care of, you know. It's a little different now. You know, the commitments are, my sister says, the commitment isn't any different. It's how the commitments are honored that's different. You know, she said, but once people made commitments, they just, you never broke that commitment. You never walked away from it. So, you know, that was the thing. So I learned about my grandmother from my older sister, who still attends the church that she went to with my grandmother, the A.M. Zion
mm-hmm.
Church, and what they believe and what they sing, what, you know, just the education piece and how they continue to educate. Like when they have, you know, how we have workshops and things like that, their workshops are always on their history. Like our workshop might be about how to make more money or how to be in relationship better or how to do whatever. Their workshops are on the history of the A.M. Zion Church. So they're always re-educating their generations and generations on their history, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting. I was just, I I was just thinking about that when you were talking about grandparents. I don't remember, like I said, either grandparent much. But I just know my maternal grandmother is from Kentucky, and I just know about her, you know, like when I go visit my relatives there. But she, you know, she moved to Chicago and raised her three children. And in education, she made sure that, like my mother went to a school. We haven't figured out how my mother went to this school, because when you look in the yearbook, she's one of the only black people in the yearbook. And I don't know how she, you know, I don't know how that occurred. But somehow she got her in that school, and because that was a good school, you know, and that was Inglewood, and that was the neighborhood that, you know, and they didn't live in that neighborhood, but somehow my grandmother got my mother in that school. So, you know, I just know from those kinds of things what kind of women are in my lineage, you know. Like, it doesn't surprise me when I do things, because I'm sure, you know, it's kind of the way I was taught, you know, one way or another, you know, through my mother or my grandmother's or whatever, you know. And so go ahead.
You just triggered something in me, and that, okay. For those of you listening out there, trigger can be a good thing or a bad thing, but it has you go automatic. And the thing that I went automatic on, you know, you said that your lineage, and I just thought about it. My maternal grandmother, sorry, my paternal grandmother Emily Hart was a midwife, as I said earlier, and what she was doing was serving the community. She was taking care of the community, and you know, when I look at it, you know, I kind of equate it to myself. What I'm doing is serving the community, looking out for the community, you know, taking care of the community, you know, nurturing the community. You know, it's real interesting that she was a community organizer when you think about it. You know, she organized the births, you know, and was there to support and take care of, you know, the newcomers to the community.
Okay.
Wow.
I just got that. Something else you said earlier that reminded me of another one of your character traits, and that was, you said, your first 4 years in Guyana, you went for these walks or something, you were saying? And you said say again what you said before.
I said that she would take me with her as she would go through the you know, through the community, and of course, I was the oldest grandchild, so she always introduced me and, you know, made sure that people knew me, and, you know, and, you know, I would have to conversate with them, but it was also there was a lot of pride and joy with her. You know, now that you mention it, and now when I hear myself speaking around it, you know, this whole thing of nature and walking and being outside. You know, I've always loved the outdoors. I've always loved the adventure of, you know, going to new places and finding new places and being introduced to new people. So it's kind of, you know, again, it's kind of the lineage.
And that's what it triggered in me. It reminded me of the walks we used to take in Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
When we were in Jersey for that retreat that time. And they were, those are truly nature walks, you know.
Yeah.
Truly.
Interesting. I had never gotten that before, that connection. But there, so there's a couple of connections that got created to here tonight. You, so what we're talking about is we've been honoring our maternal lineage, and what I've been getting present to in this conversation is the distinctions, some of the distinctions that I am, some of my habits, some of my ways of being that I've been actually been patterned for me by my grandmothers. You know, when I think about it, you know, one of the things that I got real clear about is when my daughter was very, very young, maybe 2, 3 or so, she hadn't spent much time around my mother, but I noticed that she walked just like my mother. So there are things that get translated through your DNA that are not, you know, that even though you're not around them per se, but their habits and their attitudes and their, you know, their ways of being are very much reflective in who you have become as an adult. So it's kind of interesting when I think about it and now that we presence it. So a part of the International Black Summit and what we do inside of the conversation is we begin to presence ourselves inside of our life. And so we look at things. And so today we're actually looking at the impact that that the women have had in our lives. And specifically, you know, we're talking about grandparents. And, of course, grandparents don't necessarily spend a whole lot of time in your life unless you're very, very lucky. But yet they're very impactful, and they have impacted our parents. And, of course, you see things through your grandparents, through your parents, to yourself, and then to your children, and then hopefully to your children's children if you get that opportunity. But so I've gotten present to that in this inside of this conversation, and now part of it is I'm clearing to see what's there, but I'm also clearing to see what's possible and what's the opportunity that this discovery, this new insight has had for me. So I'm inside of the question of, wow, what else about me, you know, maybe I need to do some more tracking about my lineage and how it's impacted and affected the person that I am today. So that's where we are inside of this conversation. So we wanted to bring that up. So what about that for you, Henrietta?
You know, as I listened to you, and I was replaying the walks that we took with the toy children, and how I laugh about this all the time, you know, about these role reversals. But you were teaching her daughter all about nature as we went on the walk, and I was teaching the little boy all about the cars.
the different models
of cars, and we walked. Remember, we walked to the park so the dog could run around. On the way back, he remembered certain car models. You know, so what I'm present to now is how, yes, those early years do mold and shape you in a particular way. They definitely mold and shape you, you know, whether or not you remember the person or not. You know, like I have a sister that you do not use paper plates at her house. I don't care if it's a picnic, you know. And I asked her where she got that from, and she said my grandmother. She said, "Oh, we And I remember polishing silverware. And I remember, you know, setting the table. I remember that, you know. There's certain things that you must do. There's certain things. You must wear gloves and you must wear a hat. You know, like that was that hat and gloves and purse, you know, kind of era. And just certain things that mold and shape you. I have a great niece, 2.5 years old, and we went to visit her last week, and my sister actually got there a few days before we did, but she got there after she had gone to bed one night, and then so that she didn't know that her grandmother was there till the next morning, and so her mother, when she got her up out of the bed, told her that her grandmother was there. And she came up to the room. She didn't come in and say, "Hi, Grandma." She didn't say any of that. She started a conversation with her as if she was already there. Like she walked up, "Grandma, did you know that I pee-peed in the pot? Did you know so-and-so, so-and-so? Did you know so-and-so?" You know. So she's letting her know to me that she's a part of the family, and it's like not a big deal that you're here anymore. You're grandma, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so she has that it's like a surprise when you're here. No, I know you're coming. You may not have been here for the last month or so, but I know that you're coming. You're grandma, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can have a regular conversation with you. You know, it's real interesting how we mold and shape little bitty children, you know, to do certain things, you know.
Right.
And how it really does stick with you and stay with you forever, you know, just like forever.
Wow.
One of the things that is said that sometimes difficult for the oldest child when a parent makes their transition, it's harder for the elder child, to deal with it because that person represents their lineage in that there's nobody there who can remember them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you can remember your sister, you can remember everybody after you, but nobody is over you. Nobody's older than you once certain people move on. And so that's sometimes difficult to deal with, which is why we have to tell stories, family stories. We have to share them. You know, we have to write them down.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's why so storytelling is an African tradition. You know, to pass on that lineage. And let's take our station break. This is the International Black Summit Talk Show Network, and we come to you live every Sunday from 7 to 8 p.m. And I think we've got, looks like we've got Shakaysha. But before we go to Shakaysha, the purpose of the International Black Summit is to provide an opportunity for participants to bring into being their vision for the black community in the world. So that's the purpose, and we talked about the declaration before, and we haven't talked much about the conversation or the question that we are living, because we live in that question to kind of get some wherewithal with it. So that we can begin to explore it and discover it for ourselves. But the question, the 2013-2014 question is, what do my triggers reveal that provide me access to alignment with my authentic self? And I think that that's one of the things that we were talking about earlier, getting in touch with our authentic self through our lineage. And then the second part of the question is, I am aligned with my authentic self and with my vision. And so as we look at our vision, you know, what are we here to do? And you begin, and what I notice in the conversation for myself is that my vision, my personal vision, is health, wealth, and abundance available for all. And inside of that, you know, I can see my both my grandparents, especially my grandmother Emily Hart, who was the midwife, who was, you know, who delivered the babies, you know, health, wealth, and abundance, you know, because a baby is an abundance of joy and health, you know, providing that health and you know, all of that. So I can definitely see that that's part of the legacy that I hadn't even considered. I hadn't even been present to that. But anyway, let's welcome Chakaysha to the call. Chakaysha, your mic is open.
Oh,
welcome.
Hello, Summit family, and especially a hello and honor to our storytellers, our people who deliver our summit histories and stories, and record what has taken place throughout the summit. To Glenn and Henrietta, thank you so much for being those griots. And you know, this is my favorite subject. You know, I mean, I said, God is good. It just draws you. I mean, I love it. I have so much to say. One of the things I want to do is I want to talk about 3 minutes about the annual summit event in Belize. And before I say that, I just want to say something about storytellers and griots that's so true for me. Everybody will tell you I'm a storyteller. I have started to really come to grips with I'm a storyteller, you know. And to tell you guys something, I want to say it on our radio show. My name is Chakaysha Showers. I was born Phyllis Jean Foreman. And I wrote a story about my son, Amafika, that happened when he was around 7.5 to 8 years old. And I received an email last week that said, Reader's Digest is happy to let you know that we have selected your story to be published in Reader's Digest July 2014 edition. And it's
awesome.
Going to be Life
in
the United States. And it's going to be about Amafika and me. And it's going to be under Phyllis Showers. So that'll be Chakaysha.
Yeah.
And I want $100. And I want $100.
Awesome.
So that,
awesome.
Yeah. So
awesome.
I wanted to squeeze that in and know that it's on the airways. The other thing I wanted to say is how much I love stories. And we all know how great Roots was. Roots was so, not dramatic, but so significant that businesses lost money because no one was coming out. Everybody was home watching it. And the one moment in that story that moved me to tears, that made my heart just palpitate, made my skin, you know, is when the griot is telling the history of the people. And Alex Haley is there. And when he called and they said, the griot is going to be here, come. And so when he got there, the first thing he said was, well, tell the griot to just start, like, right here. This is all we're interested in, in this point. They said, oh, excuse me, that's not how a griot works. He starts at the beginning, and he tells it all. And so Alex Haley was there. He had a stint. I still remember it from the movie. And the griot is speaking. And then the griot starts to speak the words that Alex Haley's family has been telling in a story for years that was from the African. And James Earl Jones was playing the role of Alex Haley. And he went, that's me. I mean, the words he said, his expression, I mean, it was like a moment of history reaching in and massaging my heart. I loved it. So griot in our history, we're oral people. Oral people give their history in a story. And so it's just really great. I wanted to say that. I love what the show was pointing to.
Let me interrupt for a second because I want your listeners to know that Chakaysha also does comedy, and comedy is a story being told from a humorous angle. So just want you to know who is on the radio show speaking. So go ahead, Chakaysha, back to you.
Okay, great. I'm coming back from Belize. Belize is a country that's in Central America. Central America is that space between California that connects with South America. And Belize is the only Central American country or Latin American country that speaks English. And that's where we're going. I went we're in March. I went January, so from late January until March, after March 15th. I left on March 16th. I was in Belize. And I tell you, you want to be in Belize. Belize is beautiful. Every place you look, you see pyramids. They're the Maya pyramids, so they look different than the King Tut pyramids, but they're pyramids. And what's interesting is you have the Mayas, which is an old civilization, and you have the Garifunas, which is the other oldest civilization, in the same place right next door to each other. So, I mean, you've got something rich in history. We're going to be there. Belize is divided into six districts. While I was there, I visited three of the districts. I was in Belize City District. I was in Belmopan District. I was in Dangria District. So, like, I got a really good sense of it. They're waiting for you guys, for us, you guys. We were picked up on a lot of TV shows, radio shows. One day I was walking through the district of Dangria, which is the fifth district, and I hadn't been there 8 hours yet, and somebody hollered at me, "Hey, ain't you the lady that was on TV talking about the International Black Summit?" So people are speaking of us. They are being part of the summit. We had summit chairs and summit chairs to introduce prerequisites all over the place. So, you know, get ready, be getting your ticket. Here's a tip. You want to fly into Cancun and then take a bus from Cancun into Belize City. That's a pretty inexpensive way. I checked, and it's $600 from California. So you check on there, try one travel. But things are being set up. People are looking. Definitely come early. Definitely stay late. All of Belize is waiting for you. And I'm going to have to hop off, but I'm going to try to get myself on every week to say more things about Belize. And we have a page on Facebook about the annual event. I think it's under the annual event gathering. So if you haven't registered, if you're looking at register, go ahead and register. You let us know, because that's what they want to know. How many people coming? How many people coming? So go to blacksummit.org, hit the link, and register and let them know you're coming. With that, Glenn, I'm going to have to hop off. Henrietta, thank you. I love you guys.
Love you too.
And just a little housekeeping. So Belize is right on the border of Mexico, Guatemala, and not too far from Honduras. So it is it's a little small country. It's not huge, but it is right near. So if you're looking at it on the map, it's right to the east of Guatemala and to the west of Honduras. So, and as Chakaysha said, it's the only English-speaking Central American country, which is predominantly Spanish-speaking. Okay. So, wow, what a What a great legacy conversation, because I could definitely see the possibility of some of the things that we're going to get into in Belize, in terms of the Mayas and the pyramids. You know, I'm so excited about traveling to Belize and that part of the Americas, of South America, because there is so much heritage. There is so much, you know, when you begin to look at the African influence, you know, we've been talking about legacy and grandmothers and what have you, but when you look, when you go back the far reaches of the pyramids, and, you know, of course, the most famous pyramids are in Egypt, and, of course, they defaced the Sphinx because they didn't want to see an African nose on such a great monument. But then when you think about it, that the impact of that has traveled to South America as well. And so the pyramids and the Incas and the Mayas had all of the superior mathematical and engineering techniques. So it just kind of, you know, you wonder about stuff, and you wonder about how this European culture has now sort of come and evaporated all of the history prior to it being available. But that's another conversation that we can have that one another day. But well, you know, there's a very interesting a video, and it's called, oh my goodness, what's the name of it? It's, I think it's called Colors. If you viewers haven't seen it, it is a very, very interesting, let me see if I can make sure I have the right name. Colors. That's the name of it, Hidden Colors. And the excerpts of it.
Where is it that you can download it?
You couldn't download it. You have to buy it, but you can see excerpts of it on YouTube. You can see listen, for our listeners out there, there isn't anything that I haven't been able to find on YouTube. Instructionals, you know, how-tos, viewings of. YouTube is the place for, I go to YouTube when I'm having a technology problem, and I go go to YouTube to find out if somebody's written something about how to get around it. And I haven't failed yet. Now, I haven't necessarily been able to solve the problem from the YouTube, but there are, you know, there are usually at least 5 or 6 different versions of it. But anyway, The video is called Hidden Colors, and it talks about the impact our ancestors have had on the world culture. You know, this whole notion of college and the college, you know, colleges and universities, how they've been modeled, have been the Moors set that in place. So that was all technology that the Moors knew about and formulated and presented. Of course, you know, when you listen to who invented universities, you don't hear that. You know, that's not something that is said. But they were the scholars that put that in place. So it was very, very interesting things around this video, and that I think there may be 2 or 3 of them. I know that there's at least Hidden Colors 2, and it's Hidden Colors 1, and very, I'm going to say, shocking because it really it gives you the essence of who we are as a people. And I think that if our young people got a chance to even see any of it, they'd be blown away. Because I certainly was blown away, and I've not that I'm some great history buff, but I had heard some of those things. I had, you know, read some things from different places, but to see the accumulation of all of the things that they talked about was very impressive. So I actually had a presentation at the summit event in Ottawa. That was the movie I had in the room. And I had maybe about eight or ten people came by, and it was a little late at night, and it's about almost 3 hours. But action packed. So anyway, anybody want to listen to it, you know, go check it out on YouTube, Hidden Colors, and it's just got some very interesting conversations about who we are and our contributions worldwide. And, of course, the whole notion of Christopher Columbus discovering America is blown completely out of the water. You know, there were Moors, there were Vikings, there were even Asians that had visited. They actually talk about a Japanese colony that was on the west coast of South America that were clearly Asian that had landed in America long, 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 long before Columbus. But anyway, so we're going to Belize. There are going to be some pyramids there, another opportunity for us to check out our ancestry and our rich, rich legacy, that most of which has been buried and I'm going to say stolen, so that we don't get to know who we are as the kings and queens that we really are, and that we didn't necessarily just come from slaves. So, you know, very interesting, very different viewpoint, very eye-opening. And so I think that that's what the trip to Belize is going to be, as we discover community, because we're going to be looking at what makes a difference in our community. And so we're going to be asking you, how can you make a difference in your community? You know, if we look at that question again and say to ourselves, what does that mean? What do my triggers reveal that provide me access to alignment with my authentic self? Well, who is your authentic self? Those are the questions that we're going to be looking at. And I'm asking you now to look, what is your authentic self? What does that mean to you? You know, one of the things that I thought was very interesting for me tonight is for me to get clarity about that through my ancestors, through my grandmothers. You know, I didn't talk much about Violet Winter, but she was very stern. And and the thing that I remember about her the most was that when I was out in public with her, and if I wasn't acting right, she'd pinch my ears. And she'd tell me, boy, do not. Huh?
Both ears or one?
No, just one, the one that was closest to her.
Okay.
She'd grab it and she'd squeeze it and say, boy, don't you act out here. And so I'm always in amazement when I see a 2-year-old or 3-year-old acting out and having a tantrum in the middle of the floor. It's like, and it's so unfathomable to me, because I know that my grandmother would not even allow me to even begin to go there. She nipped that in the bud.
Yeah, when were tantrums even allowed? That's something that happened in the 90s. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't even conceive of it. And the interesting thing is, this is a woman who back in Barbados was unmarried, had a child, my mother, and then married a white, I'm not sure what his religious sect was, but my step-grandfather was a white, and I want to say he was from Scotland, Ireland, one of those places, but I'm not really sure. Could have been from England. Now that you've triggered that for me, and again, trigger is one of those distinctions that we use, and a trigger can be a good thing or a bad thing, but in this case, it's now having me to go ask my mother, what religion was he a preacher for, and what where did he come from, even though he was my step grandfather. But I can't imagine what it must have been like for her to make those kind of decisions back then, when it was not, you know, their nose at her because she had gotten pregnant out of wedlock. So I believe to a married man, but I can't quote that. So again, that's something else I have to check with my mother. but it's interesting. But so my point here is that she was a strong, very in control of herself and knew who she was and was not tainted by other people's opinion. You know, yeah. She was definitely her own woman. And, you know, and I see that, you know, I can see that in my lineage as well. So it's just, you know, it's just interesting. Just interesting.
It is. It's very, very interesting. And I think we can keep this conversation going, you know, because it incorporates so many different aspects of who we are, you know, just like really, really who we are. When you think about the responsibility of a midwife, you know, you just think you're talking about the person who brings, like, no doctor, a midwife. Her responsibility was to bring these people into the world.
Yep.
And making sure that they live without any of the technology that they have today.
Mm-hmm.
That is just awesome. And
the interesting thing is that she lived, she was 88 or 89, might have been 87, I'm not sure, but she was in her late 80s, and 6 months prior, she was still cooking and cleaning. Now, she wasn't cleaning the whole house and doing all, but I mean, she was still functional. She was still fully functional. Her mind was together. And then those last 6 months, she just kind of deteriorated very quickly. And the thing, and I was now in Chicago, and she waited till after my birthday to pass. So it was almost like she was waiting for my birthday. And then once my birthday came, then she died the next day. Very connected, very connected spiritually with me. And still, I say that she's still guiding me and directing me and looking out for me. I have that sense of her still. Yeah. Yeah.
Ooh, this is a great show, Glenn. Really good. Thank you so much for taking a look, you know, and really honoring the women in your lineage, you know, and having you be present to the ones in mine. I just want to, as we close tonight, I want next month you know, which is next week. So this week, actually, but next Sunday will be the first Sunday in April. If we can kind of look to our contributions, our family contributions, see, I think the more that, I believe the more we are aware of the greatness that we are, that we came into, the stronger we'll be. It's when you know what your family is responsible for in the universe, you know, what their contribution was to the universe. It just makes you feel good about yourself. I mean, the better you feel about yourself, that's what kind of life you'll have. You know, that's what you'll attract. You'll attract things that make you feel good about yourself, you know. So let's keep looking at this. I also want us to take a look at the movies that are out, that are coming out. And like I mentioned the movie last week, but I watched the Best Man last night. Not the Best Man Holiday, but the Best Man, the original one. And tonight I'm going to watch the Best Man Holiday.
I just saw that, by the way.
Okay.
Oh, my goodness.
Right. Well, the characters in the movie represent, so I want us to really take a look into the movie, these really great movies, and so that when we go to the movie, we're looking more into what the story is about, how they're developing characters. One of the things is when African-American playwrights, they are writing movies, regardless of how we feel about them or what the people, whatever, how we feel about it, look at the story that they're telling. Look at the characters that they're developing and see where you find yourself in those characters or your friends in those characters. Because if we look with a different eye, we will be able to grow from other people's experiences. So I would like for us, you know, to do some real distinguishing about the movies that are out.
That's excellent. Because you're right, that actually allows us to see ourselves and see our communities as they're evolving, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Right. That's right. Well, all righty. So Belize, Honduras, British Honduras is what we used to call Belize. We are on our way. And as Cacatia reminded us, they're expecting us. They're waiting for us. Plan to come early and plan to stay late after the summit event. Go to blacksummit.org and register. And in your registration, the universe will open the doors for you to find your way there. Have a wonderful week. Don't let anybody play an April Fool's joke on you. And have a wonderful evening. God bless.
Yes, as we open up and really begin to get some of the spring weather, you know, understand and know that we're in change of the season. And so you need to do what you need to do for yourself to get yourself mind, body, and soul prepared for that new season. So it's an opportunity to clear out the old and bring in the new growth, the new ideas, the new thoughts, the new possibility. With that, we end the show. Peace and blessings to you always and to your family, to the legacy that you're creating for them. Good night, and God bless.
Good night.